Gray Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Gray Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It is Friday, December 3rd, 2004, 10:04 a.m. on the central coast of California. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, we're talking with Gary Gusinov, CEO of eBlocks.com, about spyware, adware, and other technically offensive behaviors, and of course, how to protect your computer and your identity. During the second half of the show, I will welcome you to join our conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to geekspeak.org, click on Contact Us. If you're getting our email box, I'll get that information again when we invite your participation in about a half an hour. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell, and the air with me are geeks Sean Cleveland, Technical Marketing Communications Manager for Transmeta, and Miles Elam, Java programmer, web developer, and student of American literature. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Morning.
Morning, Lyle.
We are going to start our conversation soon about spyware and adware, how to protect yourself from, your browser's ability to make your machine not very friendly. But before we do so, let's talk a little bit of news. Miles, I'll start with you, sir.
This one is actually along those lines of spyware, adware, and the like. A latest study by USA Today and a group called AvantGuard have done a study on putting up a Windows XP Service Pack 1 system on the internet, and it took less than 4 minutes for an unpatched Service Pack 1 system to be turned into a zombie bot.
Was this a DSL connection? Do you know if the kind of connection it was?
I didn't have that on there, but I would assume it was broadband.
Okay, so basically you buy a brand new computer, you take it home, you plug it in, you dial up for the first time, you hook up your network, and within 4 minutes you'll be infected.
Right. And it was basically saying that within that period of time, even though Macs and PCs got hit with the same amount of attacks, or had equal opportunity, the XP machine was hit with 5 LSAS and 4 DCOM exploits.
You mean they are actually infected with those?
Right. Would actually get infected with those by being connected to the internet, while the Mac remained clean.
Right.
Linux systems were also not
totally
affected, except that only 0.26% of all attacks were actually going after the Linux boxes. So,
were any attacks going after Mac boxes?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
They were trying anyway.
Interesting. Why weren't they going for the Linux boxes? How would they know?
Well, any type of network attack is going to be dependent upon who they're going after. It's just like a virus in the real world. A virus that affects humans would not necessarily affect a cat, and vice versa.
Right.
So,
okay,
it's much the same thing. The viruses just happen to be going after Macs and PCs because they're more common than Linux boxes.
All right. Thank you very much, Miles, for that story. Sean, I'm going to go to you, sir.
Yeah, some tech skills are getting pay boosts. According to Foot Partners, an analyst research company, premium pay for certified skills has slipped about 5.5% this year. So that's premium pay for certified skills has slipped. And pay for non-certified skills has fallen 4.2%, except in certain areas, such as networking skills, which has risen 5.9%. Even non-certified skills in networking, believe it or not.
Really? Okay.
And
so,
other areas.
So John, who's not here today, is actually in luck.
Yeah. And other areas like messaging, email, groupware. What they attribute this to is companies are scared they're going to be losing employees. So companies have actually been increasing pay to try and keep those employees.
All right. Makes sense.
And I've seen that too.
Well, lucky you.
But not direct pay.
Okay.
You know, more stock type thing.
Sure.
But companies are scared. So
because the market, the tech market, if you will, is finally starting to come back strong.
It's starting to come back, but the downturn has hurt a lot of people. And believe it or not, people I think are leaving tech.
Really?
Want to get out,
still.
You know, so.
Okay.
And it's hard to find the right people.
Well,
so when you got somebody that works, you know, you want to keep them there.
Right. Now, I mean, you'll be in the same case. As soon as you publish your first book, you'll be probably, you know, off and running, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We're looking like way into the future.
Okay, good. Yeah,
possible.
If you ever start your first book, that would probably help. Thank you very much, Sean, for that news story. Miles?
I can see his coworkers just going like, wait, what?
Don't give him any time to write.
Our boss says, expect a little increase in your pay next. What? I don't even think he listens.
All right, folks, people have been talking about it being off in the future, off in the front, off in the horizon. But while it's been promised for years, it has just become a reality. Stem cells taken from cord blood have enabled a paralyzed woman in South Korea to walk again for the first time in 20 years.
Is this really like totally an up and up? People have seen it. It's actually happened.
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
So what you're saying is that stem cell research that leading into a actual practical fixing of a spinal cord. You're serious?
Well, the regeneration of nerve cells. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, that is really, really cool.
Yes.
Now, why North Korea? Are they really...
South Korea.
Why South Korea? They're really ahead in medicine, or are they just more risky?
I actually don't know the geopolitical aspects of them using stem cell research off the top of my head, but...
I mean, did they just inject her and she got up and said, woohoo?
I would assume there was a little bit more to it than that, but from what I hear of stem cell research, it's not that much more.
Right. Well, this isn't that surprising in as much as it's been done in rats multiple times, even in the U.S.
Right.
They're damaging the spinal cord. The rat is totally paralyzed, and they inject human stem cells. Actually, most recently,
right.
You covered a story, and it fixes the spinal cord, and the rat's back up and moving.
Well, it's not. They aren't back up. They're not running.
Right.
They're not doing gymnastics.
Right. Right. Right.
This is a
it's a slow process, but it's possible. I mean, she's obviously has more mobility than she's had for 20 years.
Yes.
It's allowing
part
her
the
brain
story is that
to communicate
does.
With her body for the first time. You know,
mm-hmm.
So that's pretty amazing.
Wow, great, Miles. Thank you for that really cool story. I appreciate that, Sean.
Yeah, Hubble is still doing its job. Scientists have found
still looking,
and it's still finding, which is really cool. I think it's something that they should
it's a great scientific equipment.
Anyway,
best game in the world or out of the world. Go on.
They have found a new universe. That is basically a
galaxy.
Yeah, let's go with galaxy. The universe. Wow, that's more impressive than the spines.
The subatomic universe.
Okay.
They've seen life on it.
Right.
Now, this galaxy is the youngest that they found. It's called Aizuiki 18, and they think it may be as young as 500 million years, which is about when complex life began on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So, our Milky Way galaxy is about 20 times older than that, which we're about 12 billion years old. So, the youngest galaxy found.
Very cool. So Hubble's doing its job. I guess it's close. It's got to be close if it's the youngest one. Or no, I would guess maybe it's not. It's the most distant. We have to do some astronomy stuff. I love that subject. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much, Sean, for that. Miles?
And more on the biogenetic front.
Oh, 45 million light years away.
45 million light years, right. Thank you very much for that.
Oh, just around the corner.
I won't be able to. Yeah. Just hop, step, and a jump.
What? Uri Gat and colleagues from the Hebrew University in Jerusalem have genetically engineered caterpillars to make spider silk. In other words, throw silk, the kind that you would make to catch prey, that is much stronger than steel, can stretch 50% of its length before it breaks,
mm-hmm.
and has been the holy grail of a lot of material researchers.
Right.
Has taken the silk-making genes of a common garden spider.
Which makes the web that's very strong.
Right. And combined it with the culture genes of a caterpillar and have...
produced caterpillars that make really strong silk.
Yes.
Very cool.
So now, the reason why people can't use spiders as silk-making producers, spiders are highly territorial, will eat each other.
Right.
They cannot be domesticated. Whereas,
sorry, the idea of a domesticated, but caterpillars, you can domesticate them.
But,
no problem.
Silk moths are actually where most people make
right.
Or get their silk.
Right.
And so,
and it's getting silk's a pretty
Domesticating silk moths is a lot
not exactly the most kind thing in the world. Basically, you take a whole bunch of silk caterpillars or worms, mm-hmm. and you throw them in rooms with the right temperature and feed them a lot, and then you give them places to make their cocoons, and they make all the cocoons. And then once the cocoons are made, you boil all of it, killing the moths completely or the partially created moth, and getting a lot of silk out of it. So now they can do this with these new caterpillars, doing the same process, but the silk itself will be
Stronger, more flexible.
Right. Now, one other thing about this, we covered a story a while ago where they took the same proteins that make silk in the same kind of spider, if you will, that's very territorial. So you can't do the same thing with spiders. Two things. They don't make cocoons, and they'll make egg sacs, but pretty equivalent. And then, additionally, if you put them in a big room together, they'll just eat each other. So that's not a good thing. But a while ago, we had covered a story, maybe a year ago, we covered a story where they'd taken this gene, this protein that makes the protein that makes spider silk, and they'd put it into goats. And basically, the protein was being made in the milk. But the problem is goats don't spin. They can't produce silk by spinning the material, pulling the material out, the protein out. And so now, with a caterpillar, it's a perfect solution. Thank you, Miles, for that. Sean? One more story I think we're going to do. Maybe we'll get back. Miles, we're going to have one more, too. So go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, the Army is deploying robots with guns attached to them.
Finally. No, I'm sorry. What?
Yeah, these robots will be mounted with M240 and M249 machine guns.
When we say robots, are we saying?
These will not be autonomous robots. They'll be controlled by humans.
Will they be kind of like what you see in, like, bomb destruction robots, where they're kind of a track system, or they...
That's exactly right.
Yeah. That is horrifying.
Except now they're putting machine guns on them.
Sean showed me a picture of these things, and they look like something from Terminator.
Yeah. They're going to have rocket launchers. Yeah. These are pretty scary. They weigh about 80 pounds, travel about 5.2 miles an hour. They can go about 20 miles on a battery charge.
Miles, tell us what they look like.
They look like mini tanks. Well, sort of like crane. Well,
yeah, very much like mini tanks.
I don't know.
It's like the body of a tank, just the track system,
but they're smaller.
With an arm.
They remind me of some of the GoBots and Transformers I used to have.
Yeah, they look like that.
Form.
I wonder who's designing them. People that used to play with GoBots, Transformers, and such. But this is, I mean, they look very similar to that Robot 5 from, what's the movie that...
I never saw that one.
In any case, it looks like that. It looks like a little track system, very much like a bomb detonation robot that the police would use.
It'll be using the same version of Talon that's been in use since 2003.
What's Talon?
Talon was made for Afghanistan and Tora Bora to detect landmines. Mm-hmm. It had disruptors. So
basically little things that drive around on landmines and then they blow up.
It would detonate them, yeah.
Right.
These will be controlled by the idea is they will be controlled by humans and will be used in combat situations. One, I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know about the whole thing. It's kind of scary, you know.
But the basic idea is
you never know who's out in front of you. I guess you know.
Well,
it's because of the camera.
Right.
I don't know. But anyway, if they have a wake up mode, I think they're going to be used more for surveillance. Because if you had a group of guys out in the middle of anywhere, you know.
And basically, your troop is pinned down. You pull this thing out of the back of the vehicle, and you push it forward, and it goes forward, and hopefully
you get
defeats the enemy or something. But, you know, that's really horrifying. Little robots with guns. Great.
Of course,
thanks,
someone has
Sean.
To control it, you know, so.
Why can't you have news stories like Miles? You know, paralysis finally being repaired versus guns and robots. Thank you very much, Miles.
Never blame the reporter for the news.
That's right.
It's not the reporter's
fault. Sorry, Sean. Sorry. Miles, your last story before we go on to our topic of the day?
On the business front. I'm sure everyone who's viewed the web has seen the little Google ads, the Google AdSense. Mm-hmm. Ads, targeted ads for, if you're looking at a website, it'll give it the context. In the context of the ad, it'll show you something similar to it, some service or some product. Fraud apparently has been rife in this, especially with smaller advertisers. I myself know someone who has been affected by this.
Where Charlie Lang, who actually has a show later today on GeekSpeak, sells records online.
Where you
really?
Mm-hmm. Purchase an ad.
From Google.
From Google. Which you'll have a certain allotment. You'll pay a certain amount of money, and then it will allow for a certain amount of people to see the ad and click on them.
Mm-hmm.
And what competitors will do is set up a website that statistically will look like something related to the topic. so that your ads will show up
on their
page. And in addition to this, we'll also have people paid to do this, or have bots that will click on the link and use up
the ad clicks that Google's giving you. Wow, that is not good. So basically, what happened with Charlie, for example, who hosts Two Steps in the Blues here on KSP, his site...
I believe it was Charlie.
Okay. Yeah. In any case, he bought an ad, or someone bought an ad of this nature, and it was an advertisement for their website that sells music. And then a competitor that sells music basically produced a page that would show that ad and then just clicked on it a whole bunch of times, hundreds of times. Therefore, all the allotment of money that the ad was given to Google from Charlie or from whoever purchased it was used up, and nobody sees their ad except for the competitor.
Right.
This is a big thing.
It's a waste of money for the small business who can't afford to be pumping in a whole bunch of money to counteract this.
Right.
But it's also devaluing Google, who gets a great deal of their income from these ads. It's one of their money-making areas. So by doing this, if people don't, if people are just going to have their ads, just going to be wasting money, then Google then loses value in being able to put up ads.
Right.
It's this whole feedback loop. Poisoning the pot, that whole, one
apple. So Google's going to figure out a way to...
spills the barrel.
Google's
going
to figure out a way to defeat this, I'm sure.
At least they'll try.
We'll try. Yeah.
Definitely try.
Okay, thank you, Miles and Sean. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The Geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland and Miles Elam, who do news and are here almost every week. Thank you, gentlemen, for that information. Last week, we covered a news story which approached the topic of pornography. I think Miles and I talked about it most of all. And we apologize if you found the discussion of this this topic of news story offensive. Our humor was meant to entertain, not to offend. This week, today, right now, we're going to talk a bit about online porn industry and some of its technically offensive behaviors, how these behaviors exist throughout the Internet, and how to protect yourself from them. Our guest is CEO of eblockers.com. As soon as I figure out how to turn him on, he'll be with us. Gary Gusinoff, welcome to Geek Speak.
How you guys doing?
Quite well.
Hi, Gary.
Thank you for joining us.
You got it.
Now, the way that you got to our attention was this wonderful release about a study you'd done. Can you tell us a little bit about the study?
Sure. Actually, the site is eblocks.com. It's eblocks.com, just to clarify that.
Great.
We did a study recently that we used a brand new computer, and we visited a certain amount of porn sites to find out what type of spyware we would get on the computer. Then we would clean the computer with several different anti-spyware programs and track or log the type of spyware was planted on the desktop. So that study revealed that almost 100% of all porn sites that we visited had some form of spyware, all the way from very benign to very malicious applications that would literally take your personal information and dial out, using auto-dialers from the desktop and create all kinds of havoc in your desktop. And it was just we found it troubling, and the studies, more information can be found in the study on our site.
eblocks.com.
Correct.
Okay, Gary, let me just get some clarity. First off, how many different sites did you test in this study?
We visited close to about 100, a little over 100 sites.
Okay. So it's not, considering there's probably 10,000 or a million porn sites on the Internet, of the 100 you tested, 99% of them, or almost every one of them, did these kind of scams and things that were kind of devious.
Exactly.
Technically offensive behavior, if you will. But this kind of technology is used other places on the net. Other types of industries do that.
Absolutely.
For example, lots of sites that will do spamming will also do this kind of thing. And let's talk a little bit about what these are. You said adware and spyware and dialers. So let's just cover adware real quick.
Sure.
What defines for you adware?
Adware is a program that is downloaded, whether with your permission or in the background, without your express permission. And the function of the adware is to serve pop-up ads or other forms of advertising based on your surfing behavior or in random. And some of the more aggressive adware applications basically read or analyze what you type, whether you're using a word processor or you're using a search engine, and serve ads, competitive ads, based on what you've typed in. Those we find to be, those types of adware applications we find to be super, extremely invasive because they're literally reading everything you're typing. And if you're typing a password or you're typing in a social security number or a credit card number, you know, you better believe that they're able to track this information. Some of the less invasive adware applications just basically read what you've typed into the search engine, and assuming that's what you're looking for, they will then pop up an ad. Or even some of the more aggressive ones will actually feed search responses into your browser, where they preempt the browser response. For instance, if you go to Google and you type in automobiles, you would expect Google to return sites relevant to your search. With this type of adware that I'm discussing, what it would do is would preempt that response with a competitive search engine where the responses would be shown from, let's say, Lycos.com versus mm-hmm. Google.
Now, why would somebody write a program that would go to Lycos instead of Google? What good is that?
Very simple, because Google or Lycos would be paid for the clicks generated from this particular transaction.
Okay.
Now, Lycos is not one of these companies.
We're talking about other search engines.
Other search engines who are less known and consider third tier groups.
So basically, adware are applications on your machine that help deliver advertising to you.
Correct.
And the way they do that is kind of devious by, well, first installing something on your machine that you don't necessarily need.
That's right.
And then kind of controlling your behavior to some degree. Now, these pop-ups, you can tell the really offensive ones, you might not be even in your web browser. You might be in something else, checking your email or
typing something
somewhere else, and all of a sudden an ad pops up.
You don't even have to be on the Internet.
Right.
Because a lot of these adware applications just plant the seed or the executable on your desktop or somewhere in your Windows operating system, and then they launch based on timing or usage of the desktop. So you could be offline if you're using a dial-up connection, and you could be exposed to, you know, anywhere between a few ads to several hundred ads in a period of 24 hours.
Wow. So you'd assume that most of the time a user would be pretty aware that this was happening, or might they not if they don't know a lot about computers?
Well, most users are not aware, and they're not aware for two reasons. One is that their behavior needs to change in order for them to be aware of what they're putting on their computer. The reason we've picked porn sites is because porn sites tend to be very aggressive in the way they distribute adware and spyware. And some of the things that you can look for is when you do visit a porn site, and I'm sure a lot of people do this, and you're confronted with a pop-up box that says, it may even look like a system message that says, in order to continue the viewer content, you have to say click yes.
Uh-huh.
And if the consumer clicks yes, chances are they're installing something in the background.
Okay, well, let's get into what that is in just a few more minutes. And you got this great document you sent me that has some points on how not to get this kind of thing.
That's right.
But let's cover the other aspects. So that's adware. And adware is kind of spying on you because it's looking at some of the stuff that you're doing and serving ads based off of that. But the other one, spyware, what is spyware compared to adware? What's the difference between them?
Well, there's really no standard in the industry right now. I think mm-hmm. these terms are being used interchangeably, and I believe that ultimately there will be a law and some definition in the market or in the industry that will define the differences. But in our company, consider spyware any application that takes your information without your permission and sends it to a third party.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's so much gray in that definition that you know, we tend to redefine it all the time. But if you have a program that basically tracks your behavior and it records everything you do and then sends it to another party, and which could be a legitimate application. There are quite a few software companies out there that sell software that basically protects kids, for instance, on the Internet, where it tracks what your child is doing online, instant messaging or email that they're sending out or sites they visit, records it almost like a TiVo or a video recorder, and then sends it off to the parent so the parent can view what the child has been doing. Those are legitimate applications, but some people don't use them legitimately. They can install them on, you know, a coworker's computer or at the library or what have you, and be able to track what other people are doing. So, yeah, there has to be some mechanism of protecting the consumer from legitimate spyware applications or illegitimate spyware applications.
Right.
And illegitimate spyware applications are basically almost viruses that get into your computer and via spam or some other way, and they basically record everything you do, but they don't ask you for permission, nor they let you know that they're even there.
Okay.
So those are the more malicious ones.
All right. The last little thing that you'd mentioned in offensive stuff that comes on, especially through pornography sites, but could be anywhere on the Internet, are dialers that get installed.
Right.
What's a dialer?
A dialer is a program that basically, once it's installed, it starts to dial out to a foreign country. Most of the time it's a foreign country. And what it does, it establishes a telephone connection that usually costs a lot of money. It could be anywhere between 50 cents to, $4, $5, $10 a minute. And the consumer, in most cases, doesn't realize that this is happening. And since it's a porn dialer, what will happen is when you get your phone bill, it will reflect that charge, and it will usually be to a foreign country, and it's going to be for phone sex. So consumers that are visiting a porn site tend not to dispute those charges because they know that they visited a porn site and they would think that this is something they've bought and therefore they don't dispute. But there's obviously a good amount of people that do. So these companies that manufacture these dialers can generate anywhere between $50,000 to $100,000 a day in revenue just because of the way that they're distributing these dialers. And the consumers are being scammed daily because they have no idea that it's being installed. And if they are visiting a porn site, ultimately they don't dispute. So it's a good scenario for the businesses who distribute these because they do very well. But it is fraud and it is a scam because most consumers have no idea that this is on their PC.
Great, Gary. Thank you. Stay with us. We are talking with Gary Gusoff, CEO of eBlocks without the K.com. If you'd like to learn any more information, you're welcome to go to eblocks.com. He's going to stay with us, and we're going to be talking a little bit more with him about how to protect yourself, not get this kind of stuff on your machine, because who wants it? It's devious, and it affects the way your machine runs and the way you use the Internet, and, of course, your checkbook to some degree with these dialers. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at SantaCruzElectronics.com. You listen to Geek Speak. If you have questions or comments, the numbers are 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. I'd like it if we focused our calls today on the stuff that we're talking about, spyware, adware, dialers, and possibly how to protect yourself. So if you'd like to call in, you're welcome to do so. This week on This American Life, we take a trip to a tropical island in the middle of nowhere. It's a third in the series of size of Manhattan, 1,200 miles from the nearest land, but it's at the center of a lot, including international bank fraud, global terrorism, and a failed big-budget musical in London based on the love life of Leonardo da Vinci. The middle of nowhere. A lot more goes on there than you think. That's This American Life, Sunday at 10 a.m., right after Car Talk on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland.
The 19th Annual Lighted Boat Parade, sponsored by the Santa Cruz Yacht Harbor, will be held tomorrow, Saturday, December 4th, beginning at 5:30 p.m. at the Santa Cruz Yacht Harbor. Information is available at 425-0690.
This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing Internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, MySQL. Now with nationwide access, information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. We are talking with Gary. Gary, tell me your last name, please.
It's Gusanov.
Gusanov of eBlocks.com about a recent study of malicious content being delivered through web browsers. And now we're going to get into, Gary, how do these things get installed on your machine when you're referring to browsing there? And you talked about a dialogue coming up and a person saying yes or no. What is that dialogue?
Well, what happens is it can happen two ways. If you're at a porn site, sometimes a box will come up or pop-up box will come up and it'll look almost like your Windows system message. And it'll say something like, to continue, you have to click yes. Or it'll say something like, download a free screensaver to your computer, or free access, password, or something that's almost makes it almost like a requirement for you to continue using the site. And that's one form. Another form is which is very malicious, that happens in the background. So as soon as you visit a site and you click on a picture or you download a video, it starts this download process in the background. It's usually incorporating an ActiveX control that allows it to install without asking you for permission.
Isn't that a major security flaw in the browser?
Absolutely.
How can that happen?
Well, some of the older versions of Explorer, or some even the current ones, are not designed to default to certain security settings that prevent this type of behavior. So there's still quite a bit of consumers out there who are not aware of these. And Microsoft doesn't really do a good job of explaining what ActiveX is, or what are some of the risks, potential risks of it. And there's absolutely no one out there saying to the consumer, hey, if you visit a site, regardless of whether it's a porn site or something else, this is what you should or should not do. We would assume that a browser would be designed in such a way where consumers wouldn't have to think about these things. But unfortunately, that's not the case. And even with the newer browsers that are becoming popular, like the Firefox, some of these issues are going to come up again. It's just a matter of the hacker coming up with a workaround for all these different types of browsers. So
I would say in the last 4 years of doing GeekSpeak, our kind of mantra with being safe online is don't open attachments that get emailed to you. I guess our new mantra, I think most people know this at that point, I guess our new mantra is don't say yes automatically in general.
Well, I think the extension of the say no to drugs concept should probably continue onto the internet. Just say no to browser pop-up windows that ask you to say yes.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's really no. I wish there was a rule that you can just, like a rule of thumb, that if a site asks you to say yes or no, you always say no. Because if you visit a banking site that asks you to put a new password and to access your information, there may be quite a few different pop-up windows that will ask you to say yes or no. And I think it just comes down to using common sense. And, if you're visiting a porn site that you have never visited before, or just porn sites in general, what we have found is most of them are using some form of spyware, adware to plan in your computer. So that's what we're telling consumers. We're not saying this is every porn site. We're not saying that every other site that you've never visited will use adware, spyware, because that's not the case. We're just saying the ones that we did visit, and it seems like a majority of them, and probably if you did statistical analysis over all porn sites, you would find this to be pretty much a standard across the board.
And right. Another possibility is, and I feel like a broken record, but buy a Mac. Honestly, spamware, adware.
In the short term, yes. Yeah.
ActiveX components, which is what we're talking about most of the time, only run on Windows machines, so a Macintosh person won't even get prompted to run it.
Right. Mind if they were? They would have to put in their password in order to have it infect the rest of the system, because they're not running as an administrative user by default. So.
Right. Well, that's true. I mean, Miles' point is very true, that if you're on a Mac or a Linux machine, you really don't have to worry about these types of things.
Yeah, okay, but outside of porn, where else do you see these ActiveX?
Yeah, if you're not someone that goes and sees porn, then do you ever see this kind of stuff?
Absolutely. You'll see it in a lot of places.
Where do we see it, Gary? Do you know?
You can see it at, any sites. There's a lot of sites that give away free stuff, free screensavers, free downloads of games or shareware.
Fonts, icons. Yeah. So basically, if you're using the internet to find neat, nifty stuff and you're going and downloading it, lots of times this stuff will show up on your machine.
Absolutely.
Now, of course, in those situations, sometimes for a screensaver, for example, they don't even necessarily use an ActiveX component. You download something and then you run it, and that thing has a screensaver, and it also has one of these adwares or spywares and sometimes dialers.
That's right. And then we found that probably the less aggressive ones are doing it this way. They actually give you something. They give you, give you a free product, but in the background they'll load. We've seen actually a shift. We've noticed that some of these more aggressive companies have scaled it down, and they've made it very clear as to what you're installing. And they'll tell you, like, look, in order for us to support this free download or free product, we have to give you this other program that will play ads on your computer, but you always can opt out and install it.
And sometimes it makes a lot of sense. I mean, we have situations where you're getting a screensaver of your, you know, of horses that you just love. You really want that screensaver. And so basically you're saying, yeah, you know, I'll do the screensaver, and every time the screensaver, you know, comes off, or when I turn the screensaver off, I'll get a little box that says, do you want to buy horseshoes for your
right.
horse? And that's okay with me because I like the screensaver enough. So to some degree, that's not even devious, especially if it's, you know, if it's
Absolutely.
Really told you up front. And it makes sense, and some consumers will do that. I mean, people watch television with commercials, so why not have applications installing your machine for the commercials?
Absolutely. We have no objection as a company to anyone who wants to voluntarily install applications on their
right.
computer to see advertising. There's nothing wrong with that. I think the problem comes in is when consumers are not aware of it, and the company who is distributing the adware doesn't make it clear as to how it would work. And once it is installed, then there's really no way for the consumer to delete it or uninstall it.
Right.
And I think the practice is getting a little bit better. I think some of the legitimate sites that we've come across have made it very clear to the consumer, and they're experiencing, you know, a reasonable response, or at least consumers are not complaining about it as much as before. But this other, you know, I think there's this other industry that exists out there that is probably partially comprised of virus writers, hackers, and just hardcore criminals who have, you know, moved on from conducting regular criminal activity like check fraud and credit card fraud and just moved on to the internet
right.
because it's just so much easier and less painful to steal your personal information, you know, sell it off to a third party than going in and robbing a bank. You know?
This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The Geeks This Morning, Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam. We're talking with Gary Gusinoff of eBlocks.com, and we're going to take a question from Scotts Valley. Ellie, welcome to Geek Speak.
It's actually Eli,
so sorry, sir. Eli, welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you. It's actually kind of amazing because in the last 2 days I had an influx of horrible pop-ups and what looked like a virus that was attacking my Explorer. I have a PC laptop,
mm-hmm.
and Explorer wasn't opening; it was generating error. But mostly, there was just like an inordinate amount of pop-ups. Just even if I wasn't on the browser, I do have DSL, and it's from visiting other kind of websites, not porn, like various websites that have tons of ads on them. Mostly having to do with music, and which is kind of interesting. Some, you know, music selling sites, and I don't remember ever saying yes to any dialog boxes because I'm really careful about that because I know that that's what they do is they insert it. But really, my main question, my main observation and question is that the most horrifying and almost hilarious symptom of this is that a large portion of the pop-ups were ads for spyware and adware cleaners. Cost
right.
a lot of money,
right.
and I was looking at my machine and laughing and going, "Oh my God, this is like like you were just saying, regular criminals turning the internet. This is like the mafia. It's called extortion. It's
right.
almost a textbook definition of extortion. You create the problem, and then you force the person to hire you to solve the problem.
And what better customers to target than to people that are getting blockers? I mean, getting stuff like this on their machine. I mean,
right.
you're the perfect customer for them.
Absolutely.
Right.
And so I actually got AdAware and Virus Scan, the McAfee thing, and I pretty much got everything as much as I could see. I'm not having any problems anymore, and those pieces of software worked, and I'm sure you're going to get the solutions later on in the program.
Yeah.
But my main question, which maybe is a question that would be applicable in an internet law show, but I'm sure you guys touch upon these subjects, is what are the legalities? You were just talking about criminals doing this, but in terms of the companies who are buying these lists, from the people who are doing this criminally, or just where is it cross the line? And my sense is that it's foggy and not clear, and it's hard to bring something to court. I'm not bringing anybody to court. I solved the problem, but I'm just started getting curious.
Right.
Like, wow, this really is kind of like extortion. Where are the legal? What's happening in the legal world around
sure.
stuff?
Eli, thank you very much for the call. We're going to go ahead and answer that without you on air. So thank
Fine.
You very much for the call.
Thank you.
To reflect on what you just said, there's a couple things going on. One, if you go to a media or a music site, which I failed to mention is one of the biggest distributors of adware, spyware, sometimes what they'll do is some of the well-known ones, without mentioning names, actually disclaim what they're allowing you to download, and they'll tell you, like, hey, if you install a product, you either install a pro version, which you have to pay for, or a free version, which, you know, you have to view ads, and they'll give you the option to opt in or opt out of these adware applications. Some of the less known ones or some of the more aggressive ones, they actually install it without asking you. And what they'll do is they'll put into the way to prevent the liability issue, they'll just tell you that in the end user license agreement, which you agree to in order for you to install the software, they'll tell you that's what they're doing in the background. So they have a perfectly legal right to do what they're doing. As a consumer, you just should be aware of these things. And if you see unusual behavior in your desktop, just delete the software and use an anti-spyware application to clean off the remnants of it. As far as ads being shown for adware and spyware removers, there's two things that are going on. Some of these companies are legitimate companies who are serving these ads. Is that it's what happens in the advertising world is you have networks who go out and buy media from different vendors. And a lot of the times, the network that buys the media doesn't know exactly how the ad's being served. It could be served through a pop-up that comes from a website, or it could be served from a pop-up that comes from adware. And those are two distinct, different, completely different ways of distributing advertising. So some of these guys just have no idea that this ad is being served through adware.
And therefore, they have no culpability.
Yeah, they're really not liable. And the issue comes is from, you know, there's one case that was recently taken up by FTC against, I forgot his name, I think it was Stanford Wallace, that was indicted for, or in the process of being indicted, my understanding is, for creating this scheme where he would plant spyware, specific spyware on your computer, and then offer you a solution to remove it.
The thing that's very much a mafia kind of tactic, right?
Oh, yeah.
So something I am wondering, though, or not wondering, but I am not a lawyer. This is not legal advice, but a lawyer that I have spoken to was saying that any time that someone uses your computer for some purpose that you have not accepted or agreed to, this is basically every part of your property that falls under existing tort law.
Right.
Right. So if someone is using your machine, for example, for dialing automatically out, that's a problem. But then the question is, well, what is saying yes? If you say yes to that one of those little dialogues that no one ever reads,
right,
that might be the legalese in there. So
that's right.
But if you're following contract law,
yeah,
that's not necessarily
viable. Yeah, you might be able to sue them, basically.
Consideration, I guess, is what word I'm thinking of,
right,
for a contract law.
Right.
I think the software manufacturer needs to make it very clear to the consumer what their intentions are, and I think it's up to the consumer to be aware of these disclaimers and to use their, you know, common sense in certain situations where they're not sure of what the software has done or they're not aware of this website or what have you, and make the decision based on you know what is it that they're going to get at the end of the day if they download something. What is the benefit of that product, and to watch for unusual behavior. But I think the best way to protect yourself is to, one, is to limit the amount of times you say yes to pop-up windows or say yes to installs on your computer. If you're not familiar with the website that you're visiting, try not to download anything off of it. Always remember that most things are not free, and if you're downloading a screensaver or some other application, there are a bunch of reputable sites that have products that don't install anything in the background. In particular, if you're using porn sites, be aware that many of them are using spyware and adware to track your behavior and install malicious products or
steal your identity.
Steal your identity.
If you have questions for us, the phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can send us email by going to geekspeak.org, clicking on Contact Us. We're talking to the CEO of eblocks.com. That's eblocs.com. Gary Gusinoff, why don't you talk a little bit about, you just mentioned some ideas about protecting yourself, and we've talked about Adware, which is an adware removing tool before, and some other free stuff, but let's go ahead and talk a little bit about what your company offers. First off, do you do any of this kind of tactic of installing software on other people's machines and using that to get people to buy your product?
Absolutely not. We actually have been approached by a few companies that distribute adware, and were asked that if we would be interested in installing adware in the background of installing our software, and we found that to be appalling that they would even ask us to do such a thing. But there are quite a few companies that actually do that. We look at the space differently. We think that giving the consumers the ability to download our software, to scan their computer for free, and if they find that our software has found spyware in their computer, they have the option to purchase it. The difference between what we're doing and what Adware is doing is that we found that a lot of software that's free or paid for doesn't really do a good job of deleting spyware from the computer, because some of the spyware is so deeply integrated into your system that it's very difficult to delete it or to find it unless you have a high positive false positive rate, or you may end up deleting applications that are part of the operating system.
Mm-hmm.
So what a lot of consumers will do is they'll need tech support, and they'll need to call you or you need to walk them through on the phone through their system so that they can delete these files. And we offer that for free. So once the consumer is a customer, or once they paid us, they actually get free tech support. And we have
for how long? How long do you do that?
How long do we do it? We usually give them one or two calls during a year subscription. So.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the first phone call or the first couple of conversations we have, we resolve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But most of these other sites companies don't do that.
So that's one of your features, if you will.
Yeah, Adware mm-hmm. gives it to you for free, but if you try to get tech support, you're not going to get it.
Right. So basically your company does the same type of things we've talked about before. Now, we've got a couple emails from people, because after we did a show all about how to protect your machine for free, which is really what we need to do, because we are a public radio station. We don't want to be touting commercial product that much. We try not to. So basically, we did get a lot of requests from people to say, I don't really care if it's free or not. I want it to be simple. I want it to be really easy. I'll pay for it. I just want it handled.
Yeah.
And that's actually a tact I think that Sean and I both use for viruses. At this point, I just want to know a virus company that will work. So I go ahead and get Norton Antivirus. It's not that expensive, and it works. So that's great for checking viruses that come in, but it doesn't do a lot of it doesn't do any removal stuff, and it won't necessarily detect any of the spyware and adware stuff. So it does make sense to me, if you've really been infected a lot, to go ahead and pay for a product.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why we have the CEO of eBlocks on. So we're not going to talk about prices, but you've got spy blocks, spam blocks, and pop-up blocks. Why three different products?
Three different problems. Pop-up blocks will prevent pop-ups from coming up, but pop-ups that are caused by websites
mm-hmm.
and not necessarily pop-ups. It will prevent pop-ups caused by spyware, but it will not delete spyware.
It's interesting because your pop-up blocks, you've got 3 points: block unwanted ads, block pop-ups, flash, and IP ads, and block cookies. Now, personally, as a geek, I go, I don't need that product at all because I have a browser that I've set that to do that. I mean, those kind of things won't happen on a machine. If you use, for example, Firefox, which is Mozilla's free browser, you can have pop-ups be disabled automatically. You can turn off cookies in any browser. And personally, I think that having cookies on is a good thing. But in any case, at the same time, if my mother didn't live next to me and I wasn't able to help her, she'd probably need this product. So it does make sense to some degree to have a package deal. So I see that. So let's talk about spy blocks and spam blocks. Would you say that spam blocks is just a spam detecting software?
That's right. It allows you to whitelist, blacklist, block, and quarantine.
Something that Outlook kind of has filters in it for example. But in general, it's not as effective as most commercial products to block spam. Miles, do you have a point here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and again, we would recommend using Thunderbird, which is Mozilla's free client that does have a learning algorithm, same type of thing. But then again, you've got to learn how to use that. You've got to train it and such. So spam blocks. So spy blocks. What's spy blocks?
Spy blocks is
your product, spy blocks. Three
anti-spyware software that allows you to detect, remove spyware, and create settings of scanning your computer periodically. It allows you to restore what you've deleted, and create just ability to control, to shield your computer from future intrusion. But I'd like to also point out that there's a fundamental difference of how some of these other products are being distributed for free via browsers or installs through Yahoo or Google that are giving away these little toolbars. There are fundamental reasoning behind distributing these free toolbars is for Google or Yahoo to block other ads from popping up on your desktop, because they're in the business of selling advertising. Google's model, and so is Yahoo's business model, is primarily to sell ads.
Right.
So if other ads are being popped on your computer, obviously it's taken away from the revenue. They're not necessarily designed to protect the consumer, although they say that, but it's not their fundamental function.
It's a good point.
Yeah, and the second reasoning behind is that they're not, these products are very light versions of what you should have on your computer.
Mm-hmm.
So what they'll do is they'll give you the ability to scan or maybe block a pop-up, but they're not getting rid of the problem. And if you wanted to go into the, you know, Google's anti-spyware product, you'll find that it has very limited functionality, and it doesn't really, you know, have the definition database that we have. We have over 90,000 definitions, or even some of the competitors out there.
Now, Gary,
yep.
How does SpyBlocks compare, or how do all of these anti-spyware applications compare? Talking about Adaware and SpyBot Search and Destroy.
Sure.
You know, do you need all of them?
You should have at least a few. Let me tell you why.
What's your short list?
Short list?
Yeah.
You should have two. At least two. Let me tell you why. The definitions don't overlap. So, you know, Adaware definition database may have, you know, 50,000 definitions, and, you know, our 50,000 definitions don't overlap theirs.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's just has to do with the business practices. We have a certain way of identifying whether it is Adaware and spyware, and they may have a different way.
So you'd recommend if someone is to get your product SpyBlocks that they also possibly do Adaware?
They should have at least one or two. At least two.
Wow. Okay, now, Gary, my follow-up is... I've been using it, spy software, for a while, especially since we've been talking about it a lot, you know, trying to get familiar. You know, I find it confusing when I'm done doing my search and I find 90 different spyware things on my computer.
Right.
Is it safe to just say get rid of them all?
I think it's safe for you to review what you're deleting before you delete it.
Sometimes I'm not sure, you know.
You know, if you're not sure, being a pretty qualified geek, how do people figure out if something that is...
Because I've gone to a site for, you know, legitimate information, and it puts something on my computer, and I don't find the site to be, you know, offensive or anything. It's just they're putting a cookie or something, you know.
Well, I'll give you maybe a workaround around that. First of all, we classify spyware and adware low, medium, and high danger. So if you have a cookie in your computer, that's not going to, you know, create havoc. A cookie is not going to destroy your computer. All it's going to do is relay information to a third party. Now, a cookie is good if you're visiting the same site over and over and the site needs to remember you.
Right.
In banking, or if you're doing a lot of e-commerce, Amazon.com wants to know who you are, and then they can serve content based on your preferences. So,
right.
I like the SpyBlocks idea of high, medium, and...
I think identifying the relative risks is important, but the consumer ultimately needs to make the decision, because we can write a program that will delete everything, and the consumer doesn't have to even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
They'll just scan the computer and say, you have 58, you know, malicious files, here are what they are, click delete, we'll delete them all. But if you notice how McAfee and Norton have been doing it for the past 10 years in their antivirus software, even to this day, they still tell you what viruses you have, and they still give you the option not to delete them all. Although, who wants to keep a virus in their computer?
You can't select them all either, so you pretty much have to go through one by one.
You kind of have to go through every one of them.
Right.
And that existed for all this time, because they don't want to be at fault if some application was misdiagnosed.
Right.
Or it was about false positive, because then they'll be liable for deleting it. And I think the same analogy goes, compares to the what we have with SpyBlocks, where we try to do almost the same thing, and our competition does exactly the same thing.
Does SpyBlocks look for cookies?
Oh, absolutely.
And if it finds an Amazon cookie, is it going to warn the customer, hey, there's a cookie on here from Amazon?
That's right.
It will.
Yep.
Okay. So
now what we're doing is just another our newer version,
mm-hmm.
Which is coming out very soon. It's going to define these cookies a little better. It's going to tell the consumer, like, hey, this is an Amazon cookie, but this is what it does.
Sometimes it's not good to have a cookie because it caches your password.
That's right.
That's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we're talking with Gary Gusinoff, CEO of eBlocks.com. They sell products for blocking spam, spyware, adware, pop-ups and the like. And Gary is recommending, of course, his product, probably, SpyBlocks 3.0, and soon a newer product that has maybe better cookie management, if you will. And additionally, having a second choice, and for the geeks, I think we recommend AdAware and SpyBot Search and Destroy. Would you agree?
SpyBlocks is new. Okay. I definitely want to check it out.
Okay, so we'll get a feel for it hopefully this week. Sean will get a feel for it. Next week we'll give you our geek opinion of it. Yeah. Which makes a lot of sense. Gary, was there anything else you wanted to cover quickly before we close the show?
No, I think just consumers need to use common sense when they're on the Internet and be cautious when they are confronted with any type of pop-up or any kind of communication that asks them to download.
Right. Never click yes.
And try not to click yes.
I mean, without reading the dialogue first.
Without reading the dialogue.
Yeah. And if you've got an older browser, make sure to upgrade it, most recent patches and such.
Exactly.
Thank you, Gary, very much for joining us on Geek Speak today. Again, Gary Gusnoff, CEO of, well, your parent company is actually something else.
It's Network Dynamics.
Network Dynamics,
correct.
Who runs eblocks.com. That's eblocs.com. Protect your machine. There's free products and there's paid products, but definitely get some on your machine. Gary, thank you very much for joining us on Geek Speak today.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Graywolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Graywolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. Our geeks today were Sean Cleveland and Miles Elam. And our listeners were you. Thank you very much for joining us with Geek Speak. We're here every week at 10 o'clock on KUSP. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH Santa, or on the web at KUSP.org. The Board of Directors of KUSP and the Pataphysical Broadcasting Foundation meets monthly, and the public is invited to attend this month. The meeting is on Monday evening, December 6th, beginning at 6 o'clock at the KUSP Studios, 203 8th Avenue in Santa Cruz. Call the station during business hours for more information. Our numbers are 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877. Coming up next is Open Road at 1 p.m., Two Steps in the Blues with Charlie Lang for KUSP and Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxell.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Health and Human Services Secretary Tommy Thompson announces his resignation this hour. He's the eighth member of President Bush's cabinet to step down since the election.